Welcome to the Upside Podcast, powered by Upside Global and hosted by Julian Blinn, founder and CEO of Upside Global. The Upside Podcast is listened to weekly by over 6,000 sports and tech executives from all sports leagues and teams in the United States and around the world. Julian has been developing technologies for professional sports teams for over 10 years and has worked for major tech companies along with sports tech startups. In each episode, Julian interviews global leaders in sports to share knowledge on emerging technology in the sports industry and how these technologies can help improve the performance of individuals and organizations, both on and off the playing field. And now here's your host, Julian Blinn.
So today we have the honor to interview again Adam Shire, a serial entrepreneur and co-founder of Siri, sold to Apple. Adam is also the co-founder of Viv Labs, which he sold to Samsung a few years ago. He's also a venture partner at Project Voice Capital Partners, a VC fund focused on voice and conversational technologies. So welcome back, Adam.
Thank you, Julian. Great to be here.
Great. So Adam, since there's been so much hype about ChatGPT and generative AI, and you've been a pioneer in the world of AI, I thought it would make sense for us to talk about this whole trend, right? So what I'd like to talk about first is obviously what is ChatGPT or generative AI and why there's so much hype about it these days. And then we'll talk about some of the most exciting use cases that you've seen with ChatGPT and so on. And then we'll talk about whether or not ChatGPT or similar AI technology could end up eliminating jobs, right, in the future. So how does it sound?
Sounds good. I'm ready.
Great. So maybe to begin with, could you start by telling us what exactly is ChatGPT or what people call sometimes as generative AI?
Sure. So ChatGPT is actually a program from a specific company called OpenAI that launched towards the end of last year. And it's a successor. They had come out with previous versions, GPT-3, GPT-2. Yeah. But this new ChatGPT was a surprising step up. Each version gets bigger and bigger. It's trained over more data, trained with more computation. Mm-hmm. And you could see it do some interesting things. But this last version, called 3.5, I think surprised even experts in this field.
Were you surprised?
I was shocked. I was shocked.
Really?
And what's crazy is I've been watching this technology from the beginning. So the very first papers that came out on what's called transformer architectures using reinforcement learning. So 2017, I was working with a team on that work. And so I watched it. I saw uses of it 2018, 2019. In 2020, GPT-3 came out. I'm like, oh, okay, it's getting a little bit better than I expected. And as I said, last year, 2022, at the end, out came a new version. And it was surprising and shocking to me.
And you saw,
I was waiting for it.
I mean, OpenAI, right? It's funny because the CEO, right? Sam, I think his name is.
Yes.
I remember talking to him when I was at IDC like 10 years ago. And he was at another startup, and then he became, I think, partner with Accelerator, right? And so what was surprising to me is how Microsoft, right, basically invested into OpenAI. And then afterwards, Google, right? Google was so quick to say, hey, we've got one like that too, right?
Oh, yeah. So the way I see it, so they invested, Microsoft didn't just invest, they invested $10 billion.
I read that, yes.
Into a startup. So it's not just a minor investment.
Yes.
And you're right, everyone, Facebook, Google, is trying to capture mind share. Now, the reason is, I say that every 10 plus years, the way we interact with computers changes.
Yeah.
So if you think in the mid-80s, we had the mouse and Windows, and two powerful companies emerged, Microsoft and Apple, to really capitalize on the graphical user interface. Yeah. 10 plus years later, mid-90s, now we were with the web, and we were learning a new type of interface with hyperlinks, URLs, bookmarks, all these new web notions. And certain companies emerged as dominant in this new internet thing. Mm-hmm. 10 plus years later, the smartphone came, 2007, 2008. Mm-hmm. And again, there was one major winner and a minor winner, namely Apple and Android, in a sense, yeah. All the Android, right? And the companies really became successful for that decade. And I believe, and I've been predicting, that around 2020 to 2022, yeah. a new interface paradigm would emerge. And that's why I started Viv Labs, to kind of work yeah. in that space, et cetera. But I said that a conversational assistant, something
I remember that. Yeah, you said that. Yeah.
about any services, any questions, that would become, it's not going to replace a graphical interface. It won't replace mobile or the web. Mm-hmm. But I think it's a major new paradigm. And whereas we fell a little bit short with Viv Labs, we created great technology, but it didn't make the wide stream adoption. Yeah. I think ChatGPT broke through and will create this whole new era around conversational interface.
So I know when we talked the first time, yeah, you talked to me about conversational AI. And one thing you told me was the issue that those like a Siri or, Google Assistant, right? Was that when you were talking to, say you would talk to a Siri on an iPhone and then you go and talk to a Siri on an iPad, they have no recollection of what you talked about. There is no memory, right?
Yes.
So are you saying that with ChatGPT, they would have that kind of recollection?
It actually doesn't yet, but I think it will be possible. There were a few other things with Siri and Alexa that fell short. Number yeah. one, they could only handle a fixed set of tasks, like what's mm-hmm. the weather, set a timer, yes. right? And if you ask something outside of its scope, it failed miserably.
Yeah.
Right? The second thing is it could only handle simple questions. So mm-hmm. you could say, where does my sister live? And it'll say she lives in Boston. You could say, what's the weather in Boston? It's sunny. But you yeah. can't say, what's the weather where my sister lives? Yes. And you're like, why not? But it can't compose or put together multiple tasks into a complex task. Mm-hmm. So Viv Labs, we set out to try to do both of those things. Yep. As well as be able to access it from any device, as you said, with memory. Mm-hmm. But ChatGPT and other large language models, they've broken through on those first two. You can now ask an assistant pretty much anything and get an extremely reasonable and reasoned answer. Now, mm-hmm. it may not always be accurate. Well, yep. it may lie a little bit, or what they say, hallucinate. So the facts may not always be perfect, but when it writes back, you'll be like, whoa, that's an impressive answer. And the second thing is you can ask it complex tasks. So for example, I'm planning my 25th wedding anniversary.
Congrats.
Yeah, thank you. And I want to go for 2 weeks down the West Coast.
Yeah.
So I said, plan an itinerary down the West Coast of California for 2 weeks, recommend cities I should stop at, places yeah. to stay, and things to see and do. And it's for my 25th wedding anniversary.
Yeah.
And with that's something no Siri, no search engine could ever attempt to answer.
Yeah.
And yet ChatGPT can say, here's an itinerary. First it said, congratulations on your 25th wedding anniversary. Mm-hmm. Here's an itinerary that will be romantic and have the best aspects of California. And it went and it said, day one and two, go here.
So you did that, you tried that and you did it.
Yeah, absolutely. And the coolest part is it was not trained specifically for that task, mm-hmm. right? It was not, you could ask any complex question and you'll get a surprisingly interesting answer for pretty much anything. So it's not like it was built to do that or built to do something else. It has a very, very broad scope. So I would say those two things that I thought were the next step for conversational AI from the generation of Siri and Alexa and Google Assistant was broad scope. You can ask it anything, and complex tasks that compose multiple steps and multiple aspects.
Yeah.
And large language models like ChatGPT are doing that now, and it's impressive.
Let me ask you, so I tried ChatGPT, right? And I was quite impressed by the answer that it gave me. But are you also saying that ChatGPT or similar technologies could understand my preferences? So when you ask about the use case, give me a trip recommendation, right? It would also be based on my personal preferences. It would know that as well or no?
So ChatGPT and similar technologies, they have a context window.
Yeah.
Of about today, it's about 8,000 characters.
Okay.
So you can put in any question you have as long as it is about 8,000 characters. And part of your question can be your preferences. So I could have said, I'd like to plan a trip for my 25th wedding anniversary, blah, blah, blah. Mm-hmm. And then I'm a vegetarian. I like basketball and sports. And I can enter in that information as part of my query or as context to the query.
But you have to tell him. You have to tell ChatGPT, these are my preferences. It's not like he knows already what your preferences are.
It does not know anything already, but it's not too hard to write a program that saves your preferences.
Oh, yeah.
Injects them as the initial context.
Yeah.
Or anything you say before, you know, you type plan the wedding trip, it can add at the front of that query anything you've saved as your preferences up to that limit. And that limit, that context limit, is going to get larger and larger over time. But today, you know, 8,000 characters is a lot, but it's not enough for everything. I can't put in all my medical records and all my, you know, everything I have about me that might be interesting.
Yeah, and so that's a good point. Now, a quick question on ChatGPT or similar technologies. For the most part, when I've seen people use it, like they write a question, right? And you type it back, just writing, right? Could you also have a voice interface as well? A voice?
Absolutely. Like, I mean, putting a voice interface, having it, in fact, there are already apps and Siri shortcuts and Alexa skills that just take the words, send it to ChatGPT, speak it back. I've also seen versions where they've hooked up an avatar, you know, meaning a human-like face. And I've even seen a robot. So literally a physical robot you can walk up to that has a face and some expressions.
Yeah.
And you talk to it through speech recognition. Behind the scenes, it just sends the text of what you said to ChatGPT, gets the response, and then it speaks it and it animates it. It's a pretty compelling and somewhat eerie experience, but that is, you know, patching on speech or even a robot on the front end is easy, right? That's just technically, it's just gluing on a few other pieces. The hard part is knowing what to say and do for pretty much any question.
But like you said, I mean, it's quite impressive of what you can do today, right? And from where, you know, Siri or Google Assistant, how far we've come, right? So going back to the vendors like, you know, Microsoft and Google and even Facebook, right? Some people have been saying that ChatGPT with Microsoft could disrupt Google dominance in search. What do you think? You think it's a possibility or what?
Yeah, I think search will change for sure.
Yeah.
Search has been, from an interface, from a user point of view, almost the same for 20 years since it first came out.
Yeah.
You know, sometimes you want to get links to documents, but sometimes you just want a really good answer, right? And we've seen a little bit of that in search where if you type into a search box, what's the weather, it might actually give you a little one box, meaning it'll actually answer the question, or restaurants in Palo Alto, it'll show you a list. So in the past, search has started to incorporate very simple assistance into it, meaning give you the answer, not just the links.
Mm-hmm.
But now with large language models, you can have much more interesting and complex queries. Like, you know, the example of my trip this summer, that, you know, what I don't want links to a web page. I want something to help me figure out what am I doing on Monday and Tuesday, and where should, how many days should I stay in Monterey or whatever, right?
Yeah.
That's what I want. And so I think an assistant and search will blend together much more. And then if I say to an assistant, give me web pages or links, take me to this mm-hmm. web page or show me web pages, then it can. But for many things, I'm just going to say, give me the answer or help me work through or talk about the answer. So yeah, this is a big deal. It could change search. I think there's a little company called You.com, which is doing a search competitor to Google.
Yeah. Yeah.
They were one of the first to integrate large language models and search technologies. Then Bing came out recently, you know, Microsoft's search engine. You can imagine that Google needs to do something to say, hey, we can do this too. We're part of it. Don't forget about us. Because every time that new paradigm emerges, remember, there's usually two winners, you know, Microsoft and Apple for the GUI, you know, two big companies for the web, two big technologies for mobile. Well, there's probably going to be two winners, you know, the one that's most popular and then kind of the secondary, slightly counterculture, right?
What do you think is going to be the winner? Do you think that those two winners are going to be?
That's a good question. Number one is Microsoft has been incredibly impressive in how it's adapted over the decades. So they were the first winner with a graphical interface. If you remember, Bill Gates, right around 93 or 4, came out with a book talking about the future. Mm-hmm. 2 months later, he rewrote the book because the internet was just starting.
Yeah.
And he said, I came out with a book two months ago. Here's the new updated edition. 2 months later, which had a huge chapter on the internet. And he said, Microsoft is now an internet company. We are going to do everything to integrate.
Yeah.
And same with mobile. They tried to get heavy into mobile. They didn't succeed, but they're very good at capturing, you know, seeing a major trend and being relevant. So I wouldn't put it past Microsoft.
Mm-hmm.
Additionally, where, you know, what companies have a lot of our text and text interfaces?
Mm-hmm.
Microsoft and Google are two. Why? Microsoft has Outlook with all my calendar and email.
Yeah.
Google has Gmail, right? So they both have that. Microsoft has Word and PowerPoint, a lot of text in that.
Yep.
Google has Google Slides and Google Docs, et cetera. So both are, and these technologies, large language models, are primarily about text input and text and maybe graphics and commands output. So there'll be perfect things to put into your email systems, into your writing tools. So Microsoft realizes that they're going in hard. They say it will be integrated in every product they have. And they have a lot of text-based products. So I think they have a good shot. Google has many of the same kinds of tools as Microsoft. So I think it's well positioned. And they are experts at scale. They are experts at running machine learning algorithms for the entire internet on massive amounts of computers. And what does this technology need? It's very computational. It requires a lot of data and a lot of processing. And who's got the most data? Who's got the most processing? It's Google, in my opinion. So I think Google is maybe a year or two behind.
Really?
OpenAI and Microsoft.
Really? I think so.
I think so.
Wow.
And Facebook and Amazon and Apple. Yep. But if you're looking from a long run perspective, who has the real DNA, the real skills to succeed in this space?
Mm-hmm.
I think Google has the the most experience in what's needed. Yep. And so I would say for the short term, Microsoft will be the leader. Mm-hmm. Google and Facebook and others will be like, me too. We've got stuff, but they're playing catch up. They want to capture that mind share. And then I think in the long run, like 2 years plus, I think Google can take the lead again. So that's my guess.
I think what you're saying makes sense. There was also an interesting comment that I read. I think people maybe from like Google or Facebook, when OpenAI came out, right? They were saying, well, you know, the work that to put together OpenAI was based on research that was done at Facebook and Google. And so they were kind of arguing that's kind of our work, right? And they're taking advantage of it now.
Yeah, that's right. But as I said, it kind of got better incrementally.
Yeah.
And, you know, there was the version 2, version 3, and then there was version 3.5. And at 3.5, everyone went, whoa, it's the fastest adopted technology in history.
That's right.
There's something like 300 million people signed up in the first 2 months, and more than 100 million daily active users. It's everyone in the world said, whoa, like this is crazy, right? So why is it? It wasn't because OpenAI had better algorithms. Mm-hmm. And it might not even have been that they had better data, but they hired some people who were able to scale this up efficiently very, very well.
Engineers,
low-level engineers who can squeeze out the greatest amount of compute juice out of that lemon, right? And it's an art. And I think that their models were bigger and bigger than anyone had ever tried before. And it went like this, getting better and better. And then Zoom, you know.
And when you say better and better, you mean the intelligence of it or the speed? Or what are you talking about?
Not the speed, but the intelligence. So when you type something in, the question is, do you get a reasonable answer?
Yeah.
And what's different, it's very subtle, right? You got answers. If you use GPT-2 or use GPT-3, you got answers for lots of things.
Yeah.
But they weren't that great. I can't explain it, but the quality and the intelligence wasn't that great. Mm-hmm. But what was different with this later generation was it really seemed to understand the implicit nuances and concepts behind my question, right? So when I asked, you know, I'm planning my wedding anniversary itinerary, do this, that, and the other.
Yeah.
It goes, oh, first, congratulations on your wedding anniversary.
So it's almost like talking to a person. It's very personal.
Right. And it was like, now who would know to say congratulations? If I had just said I'm going on a business trip, it wouldn't have said congratulations. Right. It was surprisingly, like, it knew what a wedding was. It knew what an anniversary was. It knew that that's something you should congratulate it. Like, all of a sudden, the result, you know, you're like, whoa, a human would have said that.
Yes.
But humans know so many things that are not written down. No one has written down in a program anywhere that if someone does wedding anniversary, you should say congratulations. Just no one bothers to write it down because everyone knows it. But no one, you know, but how do computers know that? It's not written down. You don't go on a web page saying, make sure to congratulate someone. It just doesn't exist. Everyone knows it. Yeah. So those common sense reasoning aspects, human-like, you know, oh, there's a concept and this is a good thing and you should congratulate. Like, there is subtlety, impressive subtlety in coming out with that phrase, which was entirely appropriate. It felt great. And when you think about it, how did it know to do that? If I had said I'm, you know, taking a business trip or doing, you know, visiting colleges or whatever, it would not have been appropriate to say, congratulations on your business trip. That would be stupid, right? Yeah. How does it know? So that's what I mean by all of a sudden, it made everyone, when you interact with this thing, it makes you take a step back. Like, it really understood not just the words, because we didn't really talk about what is this technology at its core. It's kind of like an auto-correct in your phone. Like, you remember when it's, or an auto-predict, it'll suggest the next word.
Yeah.
But on steroids, it can predict the next word and the next word and the next word. And in fact, it can write the whole thing for you by just doing that.
Yeah.
So if, but you would think that if it's going to predict just a few words, that's very superficial. It doesn't understand the words that it's generating. It's just doing statistics and frequency and, mm-hmm. you know, but having it say, congratulations, now here's your itinerary. Wait, that's, it seems to understand the humanness of the situation more than I would have thought a statistical, you know, word generator would be able to do. So
I know you like magic, so it almost feels like magic, but look, at the end of the day, it's all based on some types of technologies, right?
Mm-hmm.
It's almost like when a friend told me, hey, we were talking about, he was working for Magic Leap, right? The AR company. And he said, look, for me, Magic Leap or AR, it's all about, I think, geometry and math, or he said something like that, right? So in very simple word, right? From an engineering standpoint, is it very complex to build something like this?
No. So literally, that's kind of what's shocking. The algorithm that existed, reinforcement learning, has existed for a while.
Yeah.
There were some small breakthroughs about what's called an attention model around 2017. So what does that mean? So let me just explain how it works. So if I say, he is, predict the next word, you're going to have in your head a set of probabilities.
Yeah. Right?
You know, could be fun, tired, whatever. And words like ice cream, not appropriate. It's just not going to work, right?
Yeah.
So largely it's based on that. And there used to be a window of time. So it would look at the last few words to predict the next word. But with the attention model, the breakthrough was that sometimes words that happen way sooner. So if I said, so Julian, who blah, 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 he. Now, it's not the blah, 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 blah that predicted he. It's Julian, which was like 30 words, 50 words before.
Yeah.
So the word Julian has an outsized importance in predicting that word he.
Mm-hmm.
And so learning, so the attention model learned that it should pay attention to this one little word 30 words ago, Julian, when it's making its prediction. So that was the one technical breakthrough that happened. But, you know, it's published. Everyone can do it. It's not hard to write.
Yeah.
But what really mattered was the scale, applying this on huge amounts of data and building up these neural networks with nearly a trillion parameters, like the size and the compute. All of a sudden, it was able to start to almost feel human.
Yeah, and it's always learning, you mean? It's like you're feeding a model, it's always learning and learning and learning, right?
There's a training phase and a runtime phase.
Okay.
The training phase, they take books and web and huge amounts of data and they crunch.
Mm-hmm.
And then they produce what's called a model. It's this giant thing that it's learned.
Yeah.
And then that model will run. So when I type a question, it's going to run against that model. So the model's not actually changing any when I use it today, but it's learned a whole lot up front, and then it uses it when I make that request.
Okay.
So there really are these two phases, like a pre-trained, huge learning phase. And then I start to use it, and it's really not learning in that instance, but it's learned a lot.
So how long is the learning phase, you think, the learning phase for that?
Many, many days.
Okay.
So a typical run on thousands and thousands of computers will be several weeks to do one single training phase. So I saw a recent paper. This isn't, I don't have inside knowledge on OpenAI, but someone has created a similar model. They said we had about 2,000 GPUs, which are high performance graphic computers, right? They can number crunch at huge. We had 2,000 and we ran the model continuously for 21 days. So that gives you a sense.
Yeah.
It takes an enormous amount of energy, an enormous amount of compute, and in fact, enormous amount of expense. So it, one of the challenges is that maybe only the big successful companies like a Google or an Apple, who have more money than the United States Treasury, literally, maybe they're the only ones who can play in this space. Because a startup, we're not, they're not going to have $10 million or whatever it costs to do a single training run. Are they going to get that kind of money? So that's another kind of issue, is that because it's so compute heavy and expensive, maybe only the bigger companies can really compete.
Or maybe that's why OpenAI literally partnered with Microsoft, right? Because they don't have the types of resources and the money, right?
Absolutely.
So, hey, what are the most exciting and maybe extreme use cases or fascinating use cases that you've come across with ChatGPT? You kind of talk about that with robots, and but any really like outstanding or just amazing use cases you've come across?
So I know a lot of people who are using this for everything they do in their life.
Yeah.
So it's not one thing, it's many things. Marketing, for instance, is an incredible use case. If you're trying to write marketing copy or, you know, build a website, it can write the copy almost better than you do.
The website, you can write the code, you mean?
Well, so let's talk just about the words first. I'm going there. So it can write marketing copy incredibly well. You can just say, I have a, you know, a blender that makes juice, you know, much faster and better, and it looks great.
Yeah.
Write some marketing messages for me, and it will. I'll give you an example. I'm trying to hire someone, and I said, I'm looking for, I have an open role. I'm looking for A, B, C, D, and I just had some features, you know, qualifications. I said, write a job description for me with these requirements. And it put together a full, beautiful, fleshed out job description better than I could have written in, you know, a few seconds, right? I was using this with my wife. She goes, what should we have for dinner tonight?
Yeah.
I'm like, I don't know. I'm like, ChatGPT, recommend 20 healthy dishes that taste great and work for a vegetarian or pescatarian.
There you go.
There it was. Tell me more about number three. Can you adapt the numbers to be two people? Bloop, there it is. Here's another example. So as you know, I speak French, not very well, but you know, I learned it 30 years ago.
Yep.
So I said, ChatGPT, I'd like to practice my French. I said, let's talk about a topic I don't know very well. Let's converse back and forth. And if I make mistakes, please correct me. Why don't we talk about the circus? I don't have a lot of vocabulary in the circus.
Yeah.
And off we went in a back and forth discussion about the circus in French. And it was correcting me as I made mistakes. It was like, and it's perfect grammar.
So you were typing in French and it would correct you.
Yeah, it would correct me and it would, we would have a conversation. And anytime I didn't understand something, I could just say in it, I could just say in English, what does blah, blah, blah mean? And it would answer me. And then we would go back to a French conversation. Huh. It was like I was interacting with a French tutor. Really,
well,
really.
You know, my kids have a French tutor. They don't quite like the interaction. So I might just have them try that.
As a supplement. I don't want to replace the human. But you mentioned coding.
Yes.
This for me was one of the most surprising applications because again, the base technology is just predicting words. So it's easy to say, write a poem about Michael Jordan in the style of Edgar Allan Poe. And it will. Mm-hmm. But that's just predicting words. I go, it doesn't really understand those words, does it? Mm-hmm. But to code, it needs to actually understand what's happening. It needs to understand what every line does, how it changes things. So I first started typing, write me a subroutine that will do X. Bloop, out it came, beautiful. And I go, okay, that's good, but I want to change it so that this happens instead. And it rewrote its own code. It understood what it had. It wasn't just spitting back some pre-existing thing. I can interact with it, say what I wanted to change in English. And it understood enough to make the right changes. I thought that blew my mind. And there's some evidence that by learning on code, by training its models over text from code repositories like GitHub, it actually learned things about causality, loops, iterations, all these concepts of logic that matter for programming. And it backported it into things like, I want my itinerary for my wedding anniversary. Right now it knows there's causality, there's loops, there's data structures. So even though I'm just talking about, I wanted cities, hotels, and places, things to see, you can imagine it creating a program behind the scenes to answer my request with a data structure of cities, places, and things to do. And it's writing a loop, needs to go over 14 days, and I need to make sure these things sequentially align, etc. So there's evidence that when I ask normal life questions, it's learned enough about how programs work to give me a logical and rational answer, and that I never saw coming.
That's amazing. Yeah, which bring my next question is, you know, do you think that ChatGPT or generative AI type technologies will someday eliminate jobs? Because many of the tasks that you describe, right? So writing a marketing collateral, coding, I mean, these are tasks that people do.
So that's a great question. All technology eliminates jobs or changes jobs, right?
Yeah.
So you can imagine the toll booth operator, you know, who used to take your money as you went past the toll, and they just took the dollar and gave you change, took the dollar and gave you change. That's been, in a sense, eliminated, but probably for the good, because the human being sitting there all day long doing that can probably be doing something better with their time. So previously, it was kind of these very low skill kind of manual jobs that technology would automate out. Higher level jobs have technology changes as well. Imagine being a real estate agent 30 years ago before the web, and a real estate agent now. It's a very different job, meaning now you're using tools and Zillow, you know, MLS systems and what have you.
Yeah.
Aspects are the same. You still interact with people, you still go on site, you still do things, but your job has changed.
Yeah.
And I think this technology will change every job. I think humans adapt. And someone said, and I think this is the best that I've heard, so now ChatGPT and large language models is getting into the higher skilled jobs. Maybe you're a coder.
Yeah.
Maybe you're a lawyer. Maybe you're an educator. You know, you're a language tutor.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think that AI will eliminate humans from these jobs, but humans using AI will eliminate humans not using AI from those jobs.
That makes sense.
And, and so I think everyone will start to adapt. So it's the same kind of thing, thinking like the NBA.
Yeah.
Right? There was, data science used to be not a job in the NBA. Now teams have data science departments and they're growing large, right? And it's not that it's become a required tool. Like, if you're not looking at the data as well, there's always the eye, you know, you can kind of see with your own eyes if someone's good or not good, right? Old school people say, no, there's the eye test. That's important, but you also need the data. And every team now uses data science as part of what they do.
Yep.
I think every job, lawyers, teachers, educators, everything, and even sports teams will find ways to use this technology to give them an advantage, and their jobs will change, but not be eliminated.
But I think, I could see the ChatGPT or generative AI type technologies being used by teams to, you know, improve their model to predict and reduce injuries, for example, right? To give them insights that they didn't have before, you know, combining the sleep data, you know, with the GPS data, with the muscle fatigue data, for example, right? And then the AI will make sense of it, right?
Yeah, I think so. It's today, it's largely text as input.
Yeah.
And text and other things as output. So anything that you can feed text into, and for instance, statistics is text, right? You just put in box scores and historical data, et cetera.
Yeah.
And the technology is very, very good at learning patterns and drawing conclusions from text, right? Yeah. That's what it does at its base core. And so, it could be, you know, whoever you can decide what that will be. If you take, for instance, like gene therapy and drug discovery, well, genes, you know, the genetic code is an alphabet, right? It's got these four characters.
Yeah.
It's long, but I think gene therapy and pharmaceutical field will be revolutionized by large language models because they can represent their knowledge easily in text, and this can learn patterns and concepts and responses from text in a way that I haven't seen before in AI.
That makes sense. So, hey, last question, because I don't want to keep you too long, but what advice would you give to any organization, a business, a team that is looking into ChatGPT, but they don't really know where to start? What advice would you give them? Let's say you're talking to the Warriors, the Golden State Warriors, right? And I'm sure they're looking into that. What do you tell them about ChatGPT? Why they should do it? How they should do it? What would be your advice right now?
So the first thing is I am not, I create a lot of technologies, but I don't get excited about a lot of technologies.
Okay.
Right? NFTs, metaverse. You know, I know you're into a lot of these things, crypto, Web3.
Yeah.
I'm less excited about most technologies I see than the average masses. This, on the contrary, I think will be really important. I literally think, just like kids today can't remember a time before the web, and they can hardly remember a time before smartphones. I go, we used to carry paper maps in our car to tell how to get around. Like, they can't even conceive of that. We used to have to go to a library in a card catalog to look up any information. Yep. They can't imagine it. I literally think ChatGPT style large language models will be so important in the coming decade that kids will not be able to imagine a time before it existed. So, and I don't say that about metaverse or NFTs or crypto or any of this. I don't get excited about many things. So that's the first message for me, is that from my viewpoint, this is exciting and important in a big way. In terms of how to get involved, it's super easy to use. You know, Bing and OpenAI and many other companies, U.com, many other companies are offering for free currently access to these tools. And all you have to know to use them is how to speak a language, English, French, choose your language. That's it. Now, it's kind of garbage in, garbage out. So if you put in a simple question, maybe you get a simple answer. If you put a much more rich and interesting question phrased differently, mm-hmm. you get a richer, more interesting answer. So it takes some practice and learning, but no special skills. And you can learn that, go out and find YouTube videos on what's called prompt engineering. Prompt engineering is how do you phrase your input to these systems so that you get the best output that you're looking for. And there are many tips and things that you can easily, anyone can easily and quickly learn. You don't have to be a computer scientist or data analyst. Mm-hmm. You can start trying these technologies today. And then for every aspect of your business, marketing, audience engagement, strategy, you know, high-level strategy, low-level strategy, if it's sports related, try putting in some statistics and asking questions about it. You know, I'm curious to type in, on Monday, we're going to play a team that plays small ball, runs really fast, and has two good three-pointers. What strategy should I use? Just to see what it says. It may not be right, but I bet it will give you some interesting viewpoints to kind of test your ideas. And you know, it's very good at brainstorming situational type things. I would try that. The last thing I want to emphasize is that this is not a perfect technology. There are many flaws, and I'll highlight a few. One is accuracy is sometimes a problem. It understands the high-level concepts, but the facts that emerge are often hallucinated. You can say, give me a bio about Julian Chire, and it will, even though Julian, that's you, and Chire, that's me, doesn't exist. It'll write this beautiful bio and it makes it up. And you're like, but that's not real. So don't rely on the data that it's presented, but I think that the concepts and the framing and the logic is very interesting. The second thing is most of these models are trained a few years ago, so they don't have the latest data in them. When you ask, you know, give me the statistics on Steph Curry, it'll be from 2021, not from 2023, for instance. So you be aware that the facts are not always live and they're not always accurate. But that said, I think this is an important technology and you should be going around every aspect of your business, sales, marketing, you know, strategy, and saying, how can we apply this technology? Because I think it's gonna be helpful. You'll find ways. Hiring, like the example I gave of, oh, write a job description for me. Oh, that's beautiful, I can use that.
Yeah. Well, look, this is super interesting. So I think I learned a lot today, more about ChatGPT. But look, always a pleasure talking to you, Adam. So thanks again for being on the show.
All right. Thank you, Julian.
Thank you.
Thank you for listening. To access past episodes and other research, articles, and analysis of sports technology, please visit our website, theupside.us. Subscribe to the Upside newsletter and receive full access to our sports tech business letter and website. Royalty-free music is provided by ibaudio.com. The Upside podcast provides timely insights and interviews with global leaders in sports technology. Until next time, keep looking to the upside.